The date is April 8th, 2009, and we are at the Amelia Island Museum of History, 233 South 3rd Street in Fernandina Beach, Florida. The following interview is being conducted as a part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veterans History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. We are interviewing John Paul Megna, born April 4th, 1930, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. My name is James McCannell, and I will interview the subject on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Assisting me is Frank Reitinger, who will operate the recording equipment. I will now begin the interview. John, what was your period of service?
Entered service October 19th, 1950.
Okay, and during which conflicts did you serve?
That was the Korean War period.
Okay. And then what was your highest rank attained?
My highest rank was, was A1C, Airman First Class.
Airman First Class, okay. And where could you give us some idea where you served?
My basic training took place at Lackland Air Force Base, which I moved up to another base up in upper part of Texas, Shepherd Air Force Base. We spent about 7 weeks of our basic training up there. After that, we moved. We were assigned to Travis Air Force Base, California. That is between Sacramento and San Francisco. It's in the Napa Valley.
Okay. And then Travis is where you were mustered out of the Air Force?
Travis Air Force Base, I was mustered out on October 19th, 1953.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, John, why don't you give us some idea of how you first got involved with military service?
Well, at the time of the Korean conflict, we had just taken a job. We were working, of course, just graduated in 48 from high school, and we were working in a photo lab, and I had two best friends who had, one of them had a twin brother. He happened to have already gone into the service. He enlisted in the U.S. Air Force, and so the three of us decided that we were also going to be draft dodgers, and we decided that we would enlist in the Air Force, so we prepared ourselves for such an occasion. One of the interesting things was at my particular size and weight, I went in at 100 pounds, and my two buddies insisted that I get up to the weight that I could get in. Otherwise, I would have been killed before I left that indoctrination center, because what they did was they gave a bag of bananas, and we ate bananas for three blocks or four blocks going to the center. And so when we entered the complex, there were several hundred of us there to enlist, and most of us were all in the age bracket of maybe 18 to 22 or something in that age bracket. But the interesting thing was that when we went in to get our actual physical, they told us, well, you go into that room and you are able to take your height and your weight. So we all look at each other and we say, oh, that's nice. So I thought about it, and of course I weighed myself in at about 107 pounds, which I thought was going to be the okay figure. Well, when the doctor saw me, he said, well, we actually want 110 pounds, but we'll say we'll pass on to you as long as you have all your other physical are okay. So at that point, I was still shaking because I wasn't sure that I was going to be accepted. And when we got the final report that day, they call off your names with all the people in there, and they say, okay, so-and-so, and we were in the Air Force at that time then. We immediately left that afternoon, got on a train and went down to, we didn't know where this was, we never heard of this base, but it was Lackland Air Force Base. And so we went into all the different physicals and all the different other things. I was fortunate when I went in for my GI haircut, I had a little Spanish, and all we had was these Spanish barbers. And so I made sure I complimented them on what I did, and I told them they did a nice job of haircuts, so I got one of the better haircuts that day. because if everybody's working recognizes the GI haircut, there's not much left. So we passed on and went through the basic training. We had a squadron, and the squadron was, at that time, they were all pretty young. We had guys, one gentleman that I remember was a Dutch kid from Wisconsin, and he was a probably the senior at that time in our squadron. He was, in the basic training, and he was probably 2 or 3 years older than most of us. And so he later developed some physical problem with his legs. He couldn't take the basic training, so he had to leave. When we got through the basic training, which was pretty much an ordeal, as everybody knows, we had our training that everybody was on the firing line, of course, and they had to take their practice shots and everything else. And, of course, then going across the different obstacle courses. When we got done with that, we were gathered in a room that night and at the completion of our time, and we were told that here's your orders and here's where you're going. And so we accepted the orders, of course, and not one of us knew where Travis Air Force Base was either. So Travis Air Force Base was my next assignment, which was located, we found out, in between Sacramento and San Francisco, California. And when we were on the base, we got there on a Sunday evening, I believe it was, or a Saturday evening, and we all went and looked out the window. We couldn't see anything because of the fog. And so when we got up the next morning, there was beautiful, sunny California. And we found out we had a hospital up on top of the hill, we had a chapel up there, and PXs and all the rest of the good things. But one of the things was we were there for several days, and we hadn't been assigned to any particular squadron. So when they finally did find a place for us, they said, well, we don't exactly need you right now, we have some other commitments, so we're going to put you into special services. At that time, we had three of us who were Catholic, Protestant, and I don't remember the other one. He probably was a Baptist or something. But they said, you are assigned to, and I got assigned to, a chaplain's assistant in a Catholic chapel. So I had to assist the priest at his services. I did that for about a month. Went to the squadron, which was a reconnaissance technical squadron, which was photo labs, and we did all the work for the airplanes that were about to come to us. And at that time, we only had the 29s and the 27s. The 25s. And one day when we were in the barracks walls and everything just made a big loud noise. So we looked out the window. We couldn't understand what it was. And we all of a sudden we saw this big, huge airplane. Well, it turned out to be a B-36. And the B-36 was probably the one of the two bases that had them. And we were the biggest base area-wise. So we had these, about 25 of them came in that first day. And we couldn't believe the size of those airplanes. When they put them out on the tarmacs out in the field, they had World War II hangars, and the hangars were two-story high. Well, the only thing that could get under that particular hangar was the nose of the airplane. And so during the years that we were there, they built these AE scaffolding, and that's how they serviced the airplanes. And that was for many, many years and many hours of servicing. And we ended up with about several hundred of these aircrafts. We never did know what they were, the numbers, because they wouldn't tell you such things. My primary duty in the service was when I was there the first several months, they assigned me to one of the sections, and my job was just to sit there and just not do much of anything except to tell what the officers told me to do, and I did them. And so they finally said, you're going to go to tech school, which meant I could go to a typing school or photo school or that thing. So I ended up at the Francis E. Warren Air Force Base in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Spent about 3 or 4 months there going through the clerk typist and administration school. And that was my primary duty when I got back to the squadron. We were all pretty much new to the job, of course. And they taught us how to take care of the administration part of it. And we, as part of our job, we also were later promoted to the section that was the operational section, which meant that we had to deal with not only the incoming pilots and the crew members when they came in with the film after they would take their pictures. We had 25 cameras on these B-36s, and they were pretty much a crew of 25 on those aircrafts. And that's not to say that there was full capacity of 25 every time they went out, but that was their capacity at the time. So we did this for 3 years, and at the time of the Korean War was coming to a conclusion, I believe it was President Eisenhower, that he became president at the time, and so he ordered a reduction in the troops, in combat, everything else. So at that time, we were told if we wanted to go out, we could go out, and we all gave pretty much the same reason for being discharged. And that was that we wanted to go to college, which we, when we got back home in Milwaukee, and for myself, I wanted to go to college, and that's what we ended up being doing. So that's pretty much our military experience. I did not have any combat time. 36s at that time, as I mentioned, there were only several bases that had the capacity to land these aircraft. Because of the size of them, I think there was something like 12 feet or 14 feet thickness of the runways that these planes could operate out of. And the two bases, bases were in California and also in Omaha, Nebraska. And these places, the planes would take off and they would fly up and down the coast of California taking pictures. And also they would also go up to Alaska, they would fly all over the world, and then we would have to develop their film that they took. But it got to be so much of an ordinary thing that our squadron was able to do it in a very professional fashion. And our squadron itself was a photographic lab, and also they made maps of all the pictures that they had. And they would critique the crew members. Now, we did not, I did not, or none of our crew, people in my area did that. All we did was take care of the operational part of it, and we would be assigned to doing that. But the overall experience that we gained from that was that it was a combined unit of great working together, which was one of the biggest things that we could say. Because our squadron was one of the better ones in the United States at the time. And we had some activities, probably socially, and also we played on the squadron basketball team and had one experience. We went to San Quentin, and we played the San Quentin basketball team. Now, these are convicts. These are convicts. And we walked down the screen and area where the convicts were and where the walkway was right next to that screen. And so we, there were about 14 of us. And it was quite an experience because these convicts were no dummies. They they knew us, and they knew, you know, enough to throw a few jabs at the air. So that night when we played the basketball team that they composed of convicts, we had a fairly decent team. But these guys would, I would call them what, professional. They were big brutes. And the convicts were lined up on each side of the basketball court. And so the guy who was guiding us that day, he told us now, he says, you watch. He says, one side will be for the convicts, and one side is going to be for you. And what they do is they bet their cigarettes. And that's how they enjoyed the game. But I might say that they beat our team pretty badly, because under the basket was not a good place to be, because they were kind of rough. Mm-hmm. But it was an interesting episode in our life. We also had a softball team, which we played intramural softball. I didn't really play on the team. I was more of a manager and the, want to call it a water boy, which I was not. I was a statistician. I took all the records and did all that stuff. We also had a very good experience by continuing our 3 years in the military service. And it probably helped me in the future, which is probably something that I needed as a young man coming out of high school. I really didn't have a direction myself, and it helped me to become an adult and to be a better judgment of what I was doing. So I can say that the military service really did me probably one of the biggest favors I could have asked. And I'm always proud that I was in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm. So you think it gave you a lot of confidence? Yeah.
Well, that was the biggest thing, I think. The confidence of taking a high school kid out. He didn't know from Adam, you know. And he wasn't really suited for, I'll say, the adult world. But you shortly become that equipped to handle a lot of situations. And we ourselves in the squadron were a whole bunch of different people, lifestyles and occupational, whatever they came from. We also had some senior members of our squadron that were Second World War people, and they were re-enlisted not by choice, but they were told that in order for them to come back, and they were basically to train the younger people in our squadron how to do such things as map making. That was the biggest section that we had, because that was an important factor in what we were doing. And so they were able to teach the younger guys. And we had some of those guys were had already been in college, they had families and everything else, but they were told, you're coming back in just to do that for the purpose of teaching the younger airmen. So that was one of the better things that happened to us too, because we had a mixture there of people. I had several officers that I can say I was very proud to have known and worked under. We got the word, as I mentioned before, we got the word to be separated, so we all, some of us, not all of us, but I think the ones that went home, and only, there was only a few that stayed out of our squadron, because a lot of us had desires to go to college, and we were able to do that under the GI Bill.
So when you left the military in 1953, then you went to college?
I went to college in 54, I think it was. Uh-huh. And I went to try my luck at graduating from University of Wisconsin, but this was in Milwaukee, so it was a business school, which provided 2 years of college and 4 years of studies. So we had a very rapid fire thing, but we were able to complete that in 2 years. And my major was in marketing, and I don't remember what my minor was, but we had one of the things was probably sales, and that's what I was geared to do, was to go into sales after I left the college. So I enjoyed my 2 years of college on the U.S. government also. Mm-hmm. And I might say, too, that I had my father, who was 16 when he went in the Navy, in World War II. In World War I. And he was a boxing champion of the Atlantic Fleet. I had a brother, and he in World War II. He served in Germany and France. I had seven uncles, and every one of those uncles served in the United States services. And I had a nephew later on who also served in the Navy in Vietnam.
Oh.
So I came from a family that felt that we need to serve our country.
A lot of military tradition.
We had a lot of military. I had seven uncles that were all of different ages, but they were pretty close in ages. There were seven brothers, mm-hmm. and every one of them went in the service, and which I thought was a pretty fair thing.
Yeah.
And that was basically my time in service.
Well, when you graduated college, what kind of work did you go into then?
I went into which I thought was going to be marketing, which was it was. I worked for a retail operation, mm-hmm. and I became involved in the sales. And then I went through the department store's junior executive training, which allowed us to get some basic knowledge of that. I also sold after I went into insurance for a very short time. And then I got involved with a typewriter machines, business machines, and I did that for 3-4 years and then decided that I would like to go into sales, stay in sales. So I went into selling office furniture, which I stayed with the company for over 20 years and kind of graduated from that. Mm-hmm. And so we were involved in doing selling and doing some other things in the business world, which I thought, because of my degree in marketing, it was a good place for me. Mm-hmm. And so we enjoyed that a lot of time. I did some, after I retired, I did some part-time work, and that was also an interesting part of my life.
So how long have you been in Fernandina?
In Fernandina? Well, it's another story. My wife had come up to Milwaukee with her sister, and I met my wife up there, and she was originally from here in Fernandina. Mm-hmm. And so we were married 35 years, and my wife had also worked, and she retired. So one day she said, "I'm going to Florida. Are you coming with me?" And that's the truth. And so when we did come back down here, that was 1993, and we had purchased a condo, and her parents were still alive at the time, and her mother, who is 94 years old, will be 95, she is still living here. So we do have some roots here, and coming all those years from Milwaukee, we came a couple times a year, but we always enjoyed living here for a short time. And then when she said, "Come down here," I said, "Well, yeah, where else am I going to go?"
So you are now a man of leisure, is that it?
If you want to call it that, yes. I said to her when we were discussing leaving, I said, "Well, what am I going to do down here? I have no friends or nothing like that." And she just said, "You'll find things to do." Well, fortunately for me, I did. I enjoy volunteering for a lot of things, and I'm active in some of the city things, like on Committee of Parks and Recreation. I also have been on the Old Beach Committee. I'm a president and have been for several years of the AARP local chapter.
Oh, wow.
Involved in my church here at St. Michael's. I do many things with them and for them. And I think that we have found many things to do over the years. It's a great place to be, Fernandina.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not inactive, but very active.
Wow. You sound like a busy man for a retiree.
For a retiree, right.
Let me ask you one question I thought of earlier. While you were at Travis during the Korean War, did you see much coming and going of troops and equipment, et cetera? Would you talk about that?
That's a good question, Frank, because, yes, I overlooked that part. Because Travis Air Force Base was basically a SAC base, an air transport command, and there was another command there also. And that happened to be the one that the transport one was one operation. But the most important part of that base was at the Korean War, we had a port of embarkation. And many of the veterans have gone through Travis Air Force Base to go to the different Pacific bases and that kind of thing, Japan and some of the other places. Maybe in World War II, we have some people out there who would remember Travis Air Force Base. It was probably called at that time, it was another name to it, and it'll come to me in a minute.
Fairfield
Susan Air Force Base. You got it. And when I said I was at Travis Air Force Base, a lot of people didn't realize that that was one of the biggest ports of embarkation. Now, as I mentioned, we had a hospital, and these veterans, war combat veterans in the Korean War that were injured, wounded in Korea, would come back through our terminal. They would be taken for additional care up in our hospital. We saw many cases of different types of frostbites and more serious things, amputations and that kind of thing. It was kind of a sad thing, but it was a very important part of our base. And we used to have occasions where we go up to the hospital and just be with some of the veterans. But I can't estimate the number of...
Were they normally flown in?
Yes, they were flown in by the one command who they had hospital planes that they were bringing in, and they would take them from our terminal and immediately put them up in the hospitals. Mm-hmm. And some of these were patients that were walkable. They could walk and do that, but most of them were not. Most of them were bedridden, chair-ridden, and we saw many of them afterwards, and it just got to be too many of them at one point, because mm-hmm. that was towards the 52-53 year. So we were seeing a lot of patients come through, a lot of veterans. Oh. And we had many occasions where we had Bob Hope was out there. Many of the stars would come and perform at the base for these veterans. And we were able to also be involved in that, too. But it was a great part of our experience also in the Air Force, too.
Well, it sounds like you had a really wonderful time, a wonderful experience in the Air Force. Is there anything else that you may want to interject? Or do you think you've pretty much covered it? Or
I think I've covered most of my military experience. Also, secondary life that I have has been involved with American Legion. I've been in that for 55 years.
Ooh, wow.
Since 1954. And I've been very active in that also. So I continue my membership in Wisconsin. I go back and volunteer 1 week a year up in Wisconsin. It's at Badger Boy State, what they call Badger Boy State. 50 states actually have a Badger, not a Badger, but they have a Boy State, which teaches them government and how the system works. And so we have one of the better programs, by the way. And we go up there for a year, for a week every year. And I've been going back. This will be my 25th year in June, which may be my last one, I don't know, but we enjoy that tremendously. We have a part in the operation of the working on the newspaper, so we get to see all the boys, and we get to have 150 volunteers that work with us on the program itself. So we're already looking forward to going up there. And
do you participate in the local American Legion?
No, I do not. I do not. I have been so long involved in all the political stuff up there that I don't want to get away from that. But I know that the Legion post here is a good post, and I'm sorry I can't join it. Don't join it. But
well, you can't do everything, can you, John?
No, I think we try to, but sometimes we don't.
Well, I want to thank you, and I'm sure that I speak for Frank also. Thank you for your service to our country, and also for sharing your thoughts and experiences with us. And this concludes the interview with John Paul Magnette.